I'm Amy, sex educator, sex and relationship coach, and co-owner of PurePleasureShop.com.
I'm April, VP of the cutting-edge sex toy company Hot Octopus, and I dedicate my life to the business of sex.
We are on a mission to teach you how to have hot sex, deep intimacy, and how to make your own rules for who you are as a sexual being.
Welcome to the Shameless Sex Revolution. Want to learn more? Go to shamelesssex.com.
And for 15% off of some of our favorite sex toys, use code SHAMELESSSEX at purepleasureshop.com.
You are listening to a pleasure podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Shameless Sex Podcast. This is your bonus episode. What does that mean? You're all going to get boned is what it means. That's not what it means. I'm trying to be funny.
Bone us. Oh, that's kind of cute.
You get to bone us. Ah,
yeah, that's what we have Tim here. Bone us.
Hey. I'm here to help bone you guys.
Yeah. You can bone all three of us if you want.
Bone us.
It depends, actually. You got to sign a waiver. Your bonus episode, hurt. What that means is, we have a lot of lube, though. I have a lube sponsor, Uber Lube.
This is an ad-free episode.
Gave
a shout-out to Uber Lube. We're just kidding. We love Uber Lube, but we're not
talking
about it.
I'm not going to tell you where you can get it.
Yeah, don't.
Go find it. Good luck. It's a wild chase. That's what bonus means. It's your ad-free episode. We try to do these at least once a month, if possible, just to give you a little something extra, a little something special. This episode is with Tim, who also hosted us on his podcast called Sex Ed with Tim. And I believe the podcast was just launched in June. And I think this episode's either going to launch in July or August. So this is 2021, y'all. But you can hear us
time
on his podcast.
Exist.
I know. We are living in the evergreen era of the interweb. So, but we're here today to talk to Tim about sex work specifically and his journey in the field of sex work. And he's already saying he has some salacious stories to share. And also, I just want to give a shout out to Tim about our excellent audio that has changed because we switched over to a new podcast database that Tim actually recommended to us. So if you're like, wow, Shameless Sex sounds better. If you don't think we sound better, then sorry about
that. I'm pretty sure Amy is going to get off of any sex and relationship coaching and podcasting just to become an audio expert. She's like, did you hear that?
Yeah.
I was like, what are you doing?
That creaking about the corner?
Yeah. I'm like, oh my.
Breeze? Oh, yeah. Yes. No.
I'm like,
no.
Amy, you are becoming.
Did Tim's dog part in the corner?
Obsessive human about audio. And I'm slightly deaf in one ear. So she'll hear something and I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. But anyway, but Squadcast, what we're using now,
we're not sponsored by Squadcast.
But we have definitely.
Shout out to Squadcast though. Yeah. We love them.
Hey, it's Squadcast.
Thank you, Squadcast.
Yeah, they have their own podcast too. Anyways, not an episode for Squadcast. This is for you, Tim. So we are going to start with the same question, but I realize it's not a question because we did this in our last
podcast. You just realized that for 4 years.
It's a demand and a command. Please, and I'll say please first. Now it's not a demand. Can you tell us about yourself and how you got to where you are today in the field of sexuality and specifically in sex work?
Ooh, so hello. Thank you so much for having me. My name is Tim. I am a just now certified sex educator. I am hailing from Toronto, Canada. I've been a sex educator since 2018, where the first sex education I ever did was teach a girlfriend how to do anal. That was a really fun little coffee date. Before that, I was an escort. I was escorting from 2012 full time and on and off until 2016. And then I went to school for business. I graduated with honors. Hey, and I decided to use my knowledge of business and sex to enter the field of sex education. So that's where I am today.
Oh, so you just basically got boned with sex work.
Exactly.
And sex education. I love it. So whenever we have had past guests that have talked about sex work or even escorting, it's always really exciting for our listeners. We get feedback about it. People listen to episodes. And that's what I think you have some incredible stories. When we were on your show, you're so funny and just you're like a big cuddly human, even though I can only see your head and your microphone, I believe that is. Hey.
And he's really good on a poll.
And
by
he's
the way.
Very good on a poll, which I'm sure we'll get into. So my question is a couple questions here. What got you into sex work and what type of sex work do you enjoy most? Talk about what you love.
Well, really, I just went into sex work mainly because I realized how good I was at fucking. So I'm like,
PhD in fucking.
Right? Yeah. A PhD in fucking. Well, okay, to be more accurate, the way I entered into sex work was I was working retail at a store, which I will not mention because hopefully they don't listen to this and like they're going to find out that they've been using their storefront for pimping. it is a big
Please tell
chain.
Me it was like J. Crew or something. It's like some...
No, let's just say...
You don't have to say it. We don't,
no, let's just say it's a synonym know. For it's a synonym for a space in between two things. The,
oh, got it. I know.
Yeah.
Fall okay. into the underground.
Yep, exactly. So it was through that company where I was doing inventory late at night. And then I saw a girl, her name was Ashley. We were the only ones there. It's like late, we're doing inventory, we're so bored, time passes. And she just brought up the fact that like, oh, I'm just doing this to moonlight and like feel normal. When in reality, I am a pimp. So I was like, oh, okay, what is that? I was like, this was me when I was like, I don't know what the hell anything is, right? I'm like, I'm just a little innocent baby lamb just wobbling my legs and walking through the world of sex. And then she told me about like how she employs her team of escorts to see different clients all over the city. And she was like complimenting me, really rubbing my ego. You're like, Tim, you're so hot. I feel like you can like fuck your way through a weekend. And I'm like, I mean... Sure, if you say so. So I ended up in her bedroom. Little did I know that that was an audition. Hmm. Yeah, it was an audition. This was when I was still identifying as bisexual, by the way. This was on like my sexual journey. So it only happened
pole
once.
In the room, or is it just the only pole no, was by
was
you.
My pole. Yeah.
Yeah.
No. I did like do the whole routine of like a lap dance, you know, or a little striptease, just to give her a little flavor. But you know, alcohol's running, and then your hormones and your horniness is all over the place, and then yeah. I ended up having sex with her and she just gave me money. And I was like, wait, what is this for? It's like, I'm going to ask you to start on Monday. And I'm like, okay, sure. I guess this is where we are now. So yeah, a lot of the clients that I had through this magical pimp were like, what do you call them? Like the one percenters, you know? Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were like
rich people, like
exactly.
Very rich ones. Okay, mm-hmm. Rich white men. Rich people. Yeah. Okay,
rich
got it.
Folks, yeah. So it was like a lot of CEOs, like
oil
fundraiser organizers.
From Dallas.
Yep, exactly. Oh, yeah. Yeah, like what is it? Like media moguls, like cable company, etc. Yeah, whatever. And it wasn't just men; it was also women. But like the cool thing about like my women clients were that they didn't really look for sex so much. They were more interested in just companionship, you know, someone to hold their hand at night or someone to be their arm candy for an event. I was like, okay, this I can do. But, you know, there would be the occasional man who would want to get it in more ways than one in a little... I don't want to call it dangerous, but risque. It was very, like, not vanilla, I guess is the best term to use. Mm-hmm. So,
are we talking about anal? Are we talking about anal?
All
we
the
can't
things.
Make assumptions.
It's shameless sex.
We can't All make assumptions.
Ooh. Yeah.
See what you did there?
Sorry. I mean, sorry like, there were some clients that were like, he just wanted me to cradle him, you know? It was just like, like no sex. I just want to be naked and I want you to cradle me in your arms and just rock back and forth for the hour. And I'm like, oh, okay, easiest money I've ever spent. And then I was like, what do I say? What do I like, you know, do I say something? Daddy loves you, or like your father never loved you. I'm like,
oh,
okay, I'm just gonna keep quiet and like rock back and forth until he's like satisfied. So that was like a little bit more on the mild non-vanilla stuff, but a little more of the wild non-vanilla would be rope, handcuffs, a lot more role-playing. And there was this one time where, and I still don't know if he is a priest or not, but there was a client who literally at the ready pulled out an entire wardrobe, like a Catholic priest wardrobe, out of his closet. It just seemed way too like efficient for him to know how to put it on so quickly. And like the Catholics are going to know this, like, you know, in the Holy Mass where you turn bread and body, blood and wine, we used Pinot Grigio. Or as I'm going to call it, Pinot Grigio, because we wanted to recreate a golden shower.
While in the priest suit?
Yeah. So I would be like the altar boy, and then he would piss on me using the Pinot Grigio.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So he'd like recite, like, I don't know, a Bible passage or something. I wasn't really paying attention because there was wine trickling into my nose. And I'm like, I'm drowning here, but I got to stay in character.
I'm so curious about that, where that comes from. And not that we, maybe he probably didn't tell you what his interest is, because one thing I understand about, you know, fetishes and kink and different aspects of power play is that it often can be a way of taking back power. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to assume anyone that's into it is in any way traumatized too, because some people have like no trauma and they're just the wildly kinky free humans.
Or some people might've seen a movie or something about,
or they could have some trauma and this is their way of taking it back. But also, yeah, exactly. It could just be like, I have no idea where this came from. This just turns me on. So did he ever share anything about that? It was just like, no, this is, I'm giving you money.
That was definitely a boundary that I had to draw with my clients. Like, if you're going to share some sort of like emotional stuff, please refrain from doing so, because when emotions and sex work start to blend, that becomes a little bit of a murky area. And it's happened before where I ran into a client at the grocery store. And yeah, they
in the produce section or
in poultry or in the raw meat section.
Oh, no. Yeah. Selecting a sausage. You're like, Hey,
do you want to like play with that at our next playtime? But like, I couldn't because he was with his wife and kids. So I was like, this is probably not a good idea for us to be in the exact same grocery store. So I'm going to keep quiet and I'm going to ignore you. And we're just going to go our separate ways. So, yeah, like I had to draw like an emotional boundary when it comes to sex work. Just
anonymity is part of sex work, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Totally.
So I'm like, I have a life too. Like up to this day, my parents don't know that I was a sex worker. I'm pretty sure they never will. But, you know, people have lives and, you know, it, as sad as it is to say, but they had some shame around hiring a sex worker, you know, and like, I feel bad for those people because their needs are not getting met. And when it does get met by someone like me, they have to hide it. I'm like, oh, like, I want you to be proud of who you are. But like, you know, don't start whipping out your dick in the produce section of Whole Foods and just like.
Probably not the place. Master.
Yeah, no.
So is part of what you love, and sorry, that's a continuation from my last question, because I know Amy has some questions too. It's not all about me. So is part of what you love about some of these experiences or something that you enjoy about the sex work, is it the variety or just tapping into certain folks' desires? Or can you go deeper into that?
I mean, I really enjoyed sex work because not only was I really good at it, but also the exposure of different sex acts and sexual backgrounds. Like, I was exposed to, let's say, I don't know, from the most vanilla to the most non-vanilla and like everything in between. And things still come up to this day where I'm like, oh, okay, I never really thought of doing it like that. And it was just like such a wild ride for me to see all these different backgrounds and how people express their desire and express their emotion in a space that allows them to when the world doesn't. And that, I think that was really like what drew me to sex work. Like, I'm helping these people to be more in touch with their most authentic self in a space where there's like no judgment, or like, you know, you're free to do whatever you want. unless it says on our waiver that like I'm not gonna let you whip me, but you know. But yeah, like
you
it was
pee on me with Pinot Grigio.
You can pee on me, you can like take a deuce right there on the floor. Oh. But you know. But yeah, it was just so wonderful to be part of someone's sexual experimentation.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that I wonder about that part that you were saying about how it's a little sad that you with you it's like a healing experience for them, but yet they can't go or healing or learning or just feeling awesome and feeling alive, and then they have to go and hide it. And that's looking at society's ideas. And I know that for folks too who are undertouched and underfucked, and whether it's like in their relationship, whether they're in a relationship or just in general, it's hard for me to find people today. People aren't attracted to me. It's COVID and I'm not getting any touch. I have a fetish that a lot of people are attracted to, at least in my social circles. And so then they feel disconnected and like this big part of them is turned off. And yet they still have this aversion to sex work because they like, well, that means I'm desperate. I shouldn't have to pay for it. When I just feel like that's just the social conditioning that we've been taught, because a lot of people I know that are down with sex work that are like, oh yeah, no, I'm so stoked to be working with sex workers. They're really stoked on the fact that there is no pressure. It's all about their pleasure. They don't have to deal with, I mean, of course, there's still consent. And you're still a person as a sex worker. And I hope that people that are having sex with, or doing escorting or whatever and engaging with sex workers are still treating them like people. But it's less of the mind game of like, do you love me? What, you know, what are you thinking? What are you feeling? Am I pleasuring you enough? Instead, you can just relax, enjoy, and make your requests. And then the sex worker can choose if they want to meet that. So I guess maybe that was my question for you. Do you feel like that's a big part of it? Is just that it's society stuff that makes it shameful for people. And if that wasn't the case, maybe they would be a little bit more like, yeah, no, this is my jam because I'm getting pleasure.
I mean, I think, hiring a sex worker out of all lines of sex work might be considered the most shameful, because why is it, you know, like, let's look at all the other forms of sex work, strippers, porn actors, camming. Those are like, from what I can see, a little more acceptable.
Legal, at least here.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. Like you can go to a strip bar, you can, you know, buy a porn subscription and nobody bats an eye. But like the moment you think, maybe I should hire an escort or a prostitute or whatever, then people are like, wow, you can't even get it yourself. And it's like, well, yeah, so I hire someone. I don't want to cook. There are some days where I just don't want to, like, you know, go to the grocery store and like chop up the onions and fry an egg. I'll just order Uber Eats. It's a need. It's a basic human need, like having to eat, having sex. I just don't want to have to work for it. So people need to get over themselves and realize that sex work is work. It's just like any other form of labor. Like, you know, I am using my body to perform a specific act for a monetary exchange, just like the way, I don't know, a white collar Wall Street worker would be using their body to type, using their mind to make a decision. I just happen to be using my huge elephant cock.
gotta go with what you get. Like,
I'm just imagining your cock making an elephant sound in that moment. Oh my God.
Oh, that was not done by production people.
That was real.
That was Tim.
That was his pop.
That was very good. So I think sex work is, and Amy and I have advocated for sex work. I have even longer than the podcast. I know you have too, especially, well, consensual sex work, that sex workers that are wanting to do that because they believe in the practice go ahead.
Well, so that podcast with Danica, just did one on sex work, which you didn't get to be a part of, but she was talking about there's people who choose sex work for survival, and there's, I forgot the other term, people who choose it with more, I guess, more privilege is what she may have said. So more out of more active choice. And that was really interesting to me to hear, because I think what a lot of people do is they hear about the survival sex work, mm-hmm. human trafficking, mm-hmm. or people with coming from some terrible situations or being forced into it for various reasons. And then they put it all in that category. And I thought that was mm-hmm. really interesting to hear that part of that. It's not all about survival. In fact, a lot of people love their jobs.
Yeah, I have a friend who is a survival sex worker. Like, mm-hmm. he will exchange sex for couch surfing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he'll travel. He'll travel the world and just meet some hot men just in exchange for a night to sleep, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that there's so much stigma around it, you know? Like, why can't I exchange sex for a bed? And then all of a sudden, like, you know, this is kind of like going back to trading before we even had money. What's the difference? What's the big deal? People need to loosen up.
We were trading services forever, and sex is a very old profession. I can't say it's the oldest, but I was actually corrected on that by historian Daniele Bolelli. I think that's how he says his last name, because he said, well, you had to have another profession to pay for the sex work before sex workers could be there. But it is a very, very old profession. And I want to just say, like, I mean, I have... I'm doing air quotes, hoard myself out in ways where to exchange something, like people, I don't know, buying me a nice dinner, or like the VIP section in Vegas or something, where, and I'm not having sex with them necessarily, but although maybe I may have hooked up with some of them later, and there's like that, some sort of like energetic exchange piece there. And I'm not saying that in a negative way, because I know that it's just energy. It was just an energy piece, and whether someone chooses to use their body to maybe receive something else.
Well, yeah, and there's also there's like the sugar baby, sugar daddy, sugar mama.
Yeah, that's me. Right?
So that's also where there is not actually a lot of times, depending, there is not any bodily fluids or even body parts exchange. You can be as you mentioned, just with escorting. You don't have to have any physical exchanges. And so that's the thing. There's a website for it, and there's many levels. And I don't know if people think of that as sex work. And in terms of sex work, I guess it could be considered.
It can be like a sugar daddy, sugar baby type of relationship. It doesn't necessarily have to. I've had sugar daddies where part of why I was able to pay my tuition was because of some sugar daddies, you know? I've put my money from sugar daddies into, I guess Americans call it a 401k.
yep.
Yeah.
I sure do.
Exactly. So here in Canada.
For y'all, okay? If you want one, just go get one. Save for your retirement.
Here in Canada, that's called an RRSP, or Registered Retirement Savings Plan. So I put a huge chunk of my escorting money into an RRSP so that somewhere down the road I can like retire comfortably. So, and there was no sex whatsoever that happened, but sex in the traditional sense of like penis in hole or hole on mouth or whatever orifice you want to put it in. But yeah, like, I guess there's also nothing wrong with a sugar baby, sugar daddy, or sugar mama type of relationship, as long as all parties are consenting to, you know, the same thing. You're all in agreement of what kind of relationship this is. And also with sugaring, sex is probably on the bottom of the list. Connection is what a lot of sugar relationships have in common. I've seen sugar babies go towards their sugar mom or sugar dad to like help with their resume, to job hunt. I had a friend who met a sugar daddy through Tinder that helped him get a job. Like, you know, it exists in so many ways, and it doesn't necessarily have to have sex. But, you know, you kind of, I think the fun of it is like, oh, daddy, I kind of need a little more money. So if you do this for me, I'll do something for you, you know?
That, Tim, maybe you should be a financial dominatrix. I don't want to should you.
I can be a findom. I can be a findom.
We've had a financial dom on the show before, and it was so interesting. And then Amy accidentally almost became one, and she was...
Hey, I did make $600.
She didn't know it was on the table, and then someone was wanting her to financially dominate them. And then my partner asked, like, are you offended that no one wants you to financially dominate them? I'm like, no, I'm not offended. I'm just going to reap the benefits from Amy's fine.
I'll take you out to dinner. Well,
yeah.
I really want
this dress. Okay?
All the other financial dominatrixes were like, your first mistake was giving back all the money, because all of a sudden I had $6,000 in my account. But I was like, I need to have this clearly defined, and I'm not humiliation play. I have Shameless Sex as my podcast with mm-hmm. April, right? Humiliation yeah. play to tell someone they're a terrible piece of shit and I'm going to blackmail them if they don't give me more money does oh, not fit yes. into the Amy Baldwin persona. And I'm a public,
it's like, you're bad. Yeah. You're real bad.
I had to ask people for help. I'm like, how do I do this? They're like, just
she asked me, and I was like, I
just be a
no
clue. Yeah, we neither of us are good at
I mean, yeah. there was one sugar relationship where I was a sort of fin dom to a capacity. It happened like only a handful of times where he gave me his platinum card and basically let me do whatever I want with it. Oh yeah. He got off on the idea of just like me having access to his money. There would be a time when we agreed that like between the hours of this and this, that's when you can spend whatever you want. But like outside of that, you have to stop. Which is like, you know, fair. That's a good boundary. So like I bought myself some shoes or like, I don't know. What else did I
call me next time that happens to you so I can tell you all my favorite stores. I prefer Gucci's. Gucci, yeah.
Like
it's all Gucci, babe. Let me tell you.
Yeah, exactly. Prada. Get the shoes, babe. Get the shoes.
Hey, I'm not asking for a Birkin. Just a little Gucci, okay?
Just a little Gucci. A little, maybe a Jag or a nice Mercedes-Benz every now and then. You know, just the little things.
It sounds like such a, I think to a lot of people, like a I don't know, fairy tale's not even the word. Like to a lot, it's unfathomable to a lot of folks that one, that maybe this, that someone might be get off to being like, hey, honey, go buy whatever you want. But people, one, get off or get fulfilled by anything and everything, and they just invite people to think outside of themselves, first of all. And then, and that's up to them. And I guess one of the issues with the financial dominatrix thing was that some of the folks, because they're into the humiliation thing and they're so turned on by it, they might actually give away their whole livelihood. Mm-hmm.
That's what you were concerned with.
I was concerned.
You're like, what if he's going to give, he has what kids or he, yeah. she doesn't
like,
really
you
know.
You cannot give away the alimony to yeah. me. And I all these
conditions. She had such a different. Conscious. Yeah.
Oh, I don't have super sweet.
Amy
was like, I can't. I was like, well, I'm not going to say give me his info. Yeah. I did it. But I do too. I couldn't karmic.
Oh, I'm fully heartless. I will take all of your money and I will just run away with it.
Yeah. You're going to go have a good old time. Part of me is like, I wish I could do that, but it's okay.
I have rent to pay. I have bills. You know, I will just take a cash advance from the nearest machine and run.
And you still, so you, I know, and we have a couple other questions for you, but are you currently doing sex work? I know you have your podcast now, and we're not, this isn't the end of the show. We're going to ask you for your plugs later, but are you working with clients now, or is that something that is a
no,
blast from the past?
Yeah, I would say it is a blast from the past. Like my last client was in 2016. Sometimes there are days where I wish I did go back, but you know, I'm feeling way more fulfilled. No pun intended, filled. I'm feeling way more fulfilled as a sex educator. In like, I feel like the knowledge I have and the platform that sex educators are given can be disseminated even further, you know, instead of just like one client at a time where I can like fulfill their needs. But like when we're on social media, teaching about sex education or like holding online workshops, we can reach more people, and our goal as sex educators is like more widespread.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I know that throughout the course of speaking to folks, when I've been to countries that have sex work as a legalized occupation, where you can walk in and you can feel safe about getting a sex worker to have an experience with you. Safety is a huge piece of that, right? Speaking to physical safety, of course, especially if you're alone or there's not a proper establishment, but also we can talk about not necessarily STIs, but that is another thing too. Mm-hmm. I would love to speak to safety. And when you were doing this practice, how do you navigate this realm?
First of all, physical safety. I had to take self-defense classes. I feel like that was very important. But that was only when I was doing it on my own. When I was working with Ashley, the pimp, I would have her like on speed dial so that she can call a guy she knows, quote, air quotes, a guy she knows to like help me get out of a dangerous situation. But when I was doing it on my own, I took some self-defense classes. That was just for me to ensure my physical safety. I would also do like a very extensive screening process. I would ask them like all these different questions, like what are you into? What aren't you into? I need to know that you're a real person. I need you to like take a picture of today's newspaper holding up the peace sign so I know that you're like real. So that was just one thing. And then for sexual safety, that was a risk I had to take, you know, because there are clients that wanted to have sex with me unprotected, which is like fine. But if I did not trust them enough, that's when I had to use protection. I'll like have a dental dam with me, a fisting glove, a bunch of condoms. And I would be tested regularly to the point where the clinic knew me by my first name. Oh, Tim, here for your regular? Yeah, just the usual. Chris, thanks. there was a lot of things. And like also on mental safety, that's when I could finally afford to see a therapist. Mm-hmm. You know, because sex and your sexual health and your mental health go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. You know, it was so draining for me to like, you know, listen to all these people's stories and to want to please them. But what about Tim? Who's going to please Tim? So I finally had enough money to like see a therapist for the first time. And that's kind of what helped me power through the remaining last years of my sex work.
I think the other thing that Danica said, this person that was talking about sex work and escorting, was the stigma that sex workers have, they're dirty, they have a whole bunch of STIs, that they don't get tested.
We're gross.
We're filthy.
We're disgusting.
And what you were saying is like sometimes, you know, you might receive money and not wear a condom based on trust and or have them wear a condom or whatever the thing was. And let me tell you, everyone that's judging that right now, mm-hmm. how many of your friends that are not sex workers have done that? Because I know every single one of my friends, not every single, but most of them, including myself at times, has had sketchy situations where I did not get any money out of it. But I was like, you know what? I don't know their status. I'm just going to trust them and take a gamble on this. Mm-hmm. And so, but yet there's this idea that if a sex worker were to choose that, then that's worse.
All of a sudden dirty. Yeah.
Dirty. And sex workers, money. I know that's the other thing Danica said, sex workers are getting tested more than non-sex workers and not all of them, but a lot of them are. And I guess it's probably dependent on the field because sex work is a big umbrella term for all kinds of different things. But I think that's just something that you just can't really judge a book by its cover and make all these assumptions.
And
that,
porn too. I mean, they try.
Oh, porn.
It's the same. I mean, you're performing.
They're getting tested all the time.
They have to get tested all the time. And they tried to pass laws in California about wearing a condom and it was like,
it didn't work.
No, not going to work.
Like, you got to keep making that money. And, you know, and the SESTA-FOSTA laws, you're talking about screening the SESTA-FOSTA laws I think that's just in the United States, right?
It really
affected the people's ability to screen. It affected the Craigslist ads and Redbook was something that it was like Yelp for Johns for people and sex workers alike to keep people safe. And now it's just gone a little more underground, but it didn't go away. It didn't stop sex work and it didn't stop shady sex work. Mm-hmm. Like that's all still.
And
a
if
part
you don't
it.
Know what we're talking about, I'm going to give you the episode to listen to because we did a whole episode about SESTA-FOSTA, a couple of them. It's very interesting to listen and it hasn't shifted. It was protective laws to help
this like a couple years ago
human trafficking. I think it was 2 years ago and it's really actually hindered sex workers and their safety instead of doing what they wanted to do. It actually was more dangerous. It created more danger.
While she's looking that up, I'm just going to drop my next question for you to ponder there. So you are an out and proud gay Asian man working in the field of sexuality.
Hell yeah.
Now in sex education, but also you said work in sex work. And I'm curious what your thoughts are about that in regards to your safety and if you ever saw racism or homophobic perspectives showing up, especially in sex education, or maybe I'll reframe this. What are your thoughts about sex education and what's missing in it is specifically maybe conversations about racism or anti-racism or homophobia or sex positivity. What's not happening in those conversations, how some sex educators might still be out there not sharing anti-racist perspectives or sex positive perspectives that are supporting queer folks. I'll just drop it there and April might have an answer for you soon, but I'm going to drop it there as she Googles things.
That is a huge question. So in my experience as a sex worker, I did encounter a lot of racism and homophobia. Racism in the context that I was fetishized, like, you know, a tight Asian bottom with a really tiny dick. And I also had to like work basically 10 times more than my white friends who would like, I don't know, they'll earn in a day what I earn in 5 days. So that was like really hard because like I had to, you know, constantly find all of these clients on my own while it was so easy for them to get one. And homophobia was very present in sex work because a lot of these clients who like, you know, they were, I would say straight men, I'm not sure, but they were men who were ashamed of having sex with another guy. So it was so surprising just to see, like, you know, even people who hire escorts can be, you know, quite gross. And then that's kind of what drove me to, I guess that's what my mission statement became in sex education, to help dismantle systems of oppression, such as racism and homophobia, that are still present within the sex education field. You know, there are people out there parroting really disgusting sentiments of, you know, like Asian stereotypes or like even in porn when you see like, black male bodies being like the epitome of sex, and then that kind of trickles down into society where black men don't feel like up to par with how their body should be. So yeah, like having to dismantle systems of oppression as a sex educator, go like, you know, I want you to be able to fuck, but I also want you to be aware of like the pleasure that's being hindered by these systems of oppression, you know? For example, like she who must not be named, Kim, Kim Anami, she came up with that video about JDAG from China.
Kung Fu Vagina.
Well, I think Kim Anami, the way she apologized, really, that was hard for me.
Oh, yeah.
Because she did receive a lot of negative press from folks that were talking about how it wasn't even a microaggression, it was a macroaggression.
Oh, yeah.
So culturally. And so I was really bummed by that that apology, because it wasn't an apology at all. It was actually...
It was mocking the apology.
It was a non-apology.
Yeah, which was like that hurt me to see that. And so sorry to interject. I just wanted to add that piece because...
No, all good.
I'm a huge fan of art and all sorts of art. And I am a huge fan of vulvas, vaginas, penises, and all sorts of things in between.
I'm sure when freedom of expression is like, when we can use that, like, well, this is my right, this is free speech, this is freedom of expression. When you have people that are
at the expense of
other people,
you know, like, you know, that's what I mean. It's like, you can have freedom of expression, but at what cost?
Tim, when it comes to revamping, or what does sex education need? And not even in terms of in like modern day, but in general, like moving forward, if we could change things, how can we support queer, BIPOC folks, how can sex education be more anti-racist?
Learning where sex education came from and the dark history behind it. Even people such as like Masters and Johnson had some problematic things. Like, they thought that same-sex relationships were quote unquote deviant. Like clearly it's not. So when you learn the really murky tip of the iceberg history of sex education, you know how to lead the way for future sex educators. When you learn about things like Tuskegee or the Puerto Rico birth control experiment, or even here in Canada when they wanted to forcibly sterilize their Indigenous women, you are more aware of how we got here so that you know how to build a better world for generations now and for generations of the future. Once you have a knowledge of the history, you know how to move forward, and you know how to make the world a better, more pleasurable, more orgasmic place for the rest of us.
We want that. And what I'm hearing, there's just a lot about accountability, and even aside from accountability, too, just awareness as well, and asking the deeper questions and staying open to learning more. April finally found the number of the episode that we talked about, the Sesta Fosta laws. It was with a lingerie model who works out of Los Angeles. It's episode number 60, also named Kim, but a different Kim.
Kim K.
And,
she's born.
Kardashian.
Kim Kardashian.
And incredibly intelligent.
Not Kim Kardashian. All right. Well, we could talk to you forever and ever and ever. And so for our listeners, they can listen to you and they can hear us on your podcast, and you have more to plug besides your podcast as well. But please, please, please tell our listeners how they can find you, how they can work with you, how they can find your podcast, all the things.
For sure. So all my plugs, not including my butt. my website is sexedwithtim.com, where you can find my blog and my advice column. You are welcome to write in your blog ideas or your questions for me. You can also support my podcast, Sex Ed with Tim, streaming on all podcasting platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, wherever you want. You can also support my show through Patreon, where I have a exclusive podcast called Sex Ed with Tim One Night Stand, where it's like the more salacious parts that I don't really want to share with the rest of the world. It's very personal and it's very me. My social media on Instagram and Twitter are both the same handles, Gay Slut Clown and Sex Ed with Tim. You can also like and follow me on Facebook at Sex Ed with Tim. And I think that's all my plugs. I just need to take the one that's in my head.
Butt plug.
Yeah, where's the butt plug one? And I have to say, go check out the Instagram, because your pole work and your floor work and those heels.
I mean, it hurts, but you know what? You're looking pretty when you're
look pretty.
But it hurts so much because it's like I'm pressing my skin against really hard metal and like, oh, but you look so sexy doing it. I'm like, it's okay. Smile through the pain. Smile through the pain.
It is pretty beautiful. And thank you for expressing yourself both on social media and on the Shameless Sex podcast. And this was a great bonus episode, Tim. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, there was a little bit of fun, a little bit of reality, and a little bit of suggestions.
Equal parts knowledge, equal parts entertainment. We're here
like the
for
perfect
it.
Cocktail. Ooh. All right.
Cocktail.
Cock is on my mind right now. I am in desperate need of cock.
Well,
actually, speaking of sex work, I just hired a sex worker for the weekend. So,
nice.
There you go.
Yeah. No shame in the sex work game.
Oh yeah, he's hot. Okay. He's so nice. Hot. Yeah.
Well, congratulations. Enjoy the weekend. And for all of you shameless sex listeners out there, guess what? You just joined us for a beautiful bone-ass episode.
Ooh.
So we don't know what day you're listening. It could be Friday. It could be Monday. It could be a hump-y day. Ooh, but we will see you next Tuesday for a beautiful episode of Shameless Sex. Thank you for being a Shameless Sex revolutionary. Ciao for now. Want to learn more? Go to shamelesssex.com.
And for 15% off of some of our favorite sex toys, use code SHAMELESSSEX at purepleasureshop.com.